You're now listening to Mixed Mental Arts with Brian Callen and Hunter Motz.
This is Mixed Martial Arts. Mixed Mental Arts. Logo coming.
Logo coming. Well, logo we have a temporary new logo,
yep.
But there's going to be an even better one.
Yep. So, logo coming, and we are here, and I am Hunter and I have been talking about, I think we started with the idea that the way we speak a lot of times is a bit useless for solving problems. If you hear my offspring in the background, well, I want you to think this way. Some people go, oh, it's annoying. There was a shaman in the North Pole, or in the, you know, he was an Inuit shaman, and he was dying. And he said, I've heard the sound of the universe. And they said, you know, great shaman, what does it sound like? And he said, children playing in the distance. So I hope you guys are listening. And if you hear my children playing in the distance, know that that is indeed the sound of the universe.
Wow. Yeah. Brian, that's really...
And what he really meant was that's the sound of God. Okay.
Whoa,
yeah. So
Jesus.
I like to start. Yeah.
Oh,
like
wow. Start bold,
yeah,
Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way. Lay it out.
I start bold. I start strong.
Yeah. You start by misnaming your own show.
Always misnaming my own show. I'm that humble. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, well, I think also that it's important to recognize that those are the children that you have taken credit for.
Yeah, I think they're my kids. They don't look like me. But
we were talking about
the sort of like, you know, even somebody, John Brinkus, I did his Brink at Midnight podcast, and he said, you know, what are your successes and failures? And I said, that when you speak about that in those sort of binary way of talking, the way we all do, good guys and bad guys, non-racists and racists, all this stuff, you know, I don't, everything I do has an element of failure and an element of success. If I shoot a special, if I do a TV show, I fail a great deal within that, obviously, but there's probably hopefully more success than there is failure. But let's just take another example. We live in the public discourse is so useless. Like what we love to do is just take a person that we disagree with and brand them something. And it's mm-hmm. usually something pretty nasty,
mm-hmm.
a racist, a homophobe, a xenophobe, and all these things. And what usually will happen is it's because they've uttered a sentence that seems to go against the sort of the common, the maw, or
the
whatever
orthodoxy,
the orthodoxy of the day. Right.
Yeah.
And so, so Steve Bannon, as an example, I actually went and listened to some of his interviews. He's Harvard business graduate, naval officer, Goldman Sachs alumni, very accomplished guy, very smart guy, and a free market capitalist and all that stuff. But I was really listening to what his gripe was, and he has a point. But what the liberal media seems to like to do is, because he was part of Breitbart News and people of the alt-right, et cetera, listen to it, they love to associate him with white supremacy. Now, I don't know Steve Bannon, and I don't know what his I know that, you know, and the other thing he said that was, you know, that they kept replaying was that he said, well, what if we don't have immigration for a while? Now, I don't think that makes sense, but for him, he was saying, what if we use the resources that we have for the people that are already in this country that don't have a lot of money? It's an idea. It's not a terrible idea. It's not as though he's, you can listen to that. I don't agree with that idea, but you can listen to that idea, and it doesn't mean that he is X, Y, and Z. It just means he's trying to solve a problem, and maybe he's trying to be unorthodox in his thinking. But what we love to do is we like to say a guy like Steve Bannon is, you know, five pretty negative things that take him completely out of the game. And of course you don't do that. Of course what you do is people are smarter than that. Or at least they're angrier than that.
Yeah.
And they go bullshit, you know.
And I think what you said about taking people out of the game, there's an attempt by both, I mean, by the many, many, many tribes to make it so that I don't have to listen to those who disagree with me. And, you know, that's very easy to do because all you do is, and this comes down to what Brian does best. Mm. What Brian Callen does better than any other human I have ever met is to wrap people in stories about themselves. But you do it positively. Mm. So what you do, and, you know, this is obviously a strategy that you learned living all over the world and moving between cultures, is that you're amazing at identifying what somebody you know, is proud of or good at, mm-hmm. or what they, you know, take pride in, and you pluck that thing out and you hold that thing up, not just in front of them, but in front of whatever gathering you're mm-hmm. in, and you say, look at how amazing this aspect of this person is. We're so lucky to have this person. But what you're doing is that you're telling a story about someone, mm-hmm. and you can tell stories about people that discredit them and marginalize them, and you can tell stories that make them the king.
That's right.
And the question is, what stories are we telling about each other? Are we telling stories that, you know, marginalize people, or are we telling stories that offer people the potential to be better and to rise
well,
the occasion?
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. And for me, I've always felt like everybody, see, if you say that you actually believe everybody's of the same moral worth or of the same potential, which I actually believe deeply, mm-hmm. I actually believe that regardless of your skin color or your origin, you have the same potential. I really do believe that. Mm-hmm. And the reason I believe that is I've seen it in too many instances,
yep.
right? There's just no science to prove otherwise. There may be some, but for the most part, I think the overwhelming evidence would suggest that human beings under favorable circumstances can accomplish great things regardless of their this, that, and the other thing, right? Which is, you know.
That is what the science supports, and that's what the last 200 episodes have been about.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you, I'm trying to think of what I was trying to say here. What were you saying? Because I'm trying to follow
well,
this thought.
Well, I think, yeah, it's about the stories.
Oh, right. So for me, the way I'm always amazed that people can't do the following. I'm always amazed that people can't put themselves in the shoes of the people over there that you're talking about and maybe realize that you would probably behave in a very similar way. So even I was talking to a Navy SEAL, this badass ex high level SEAL team guy, and he spent a lot of time in the war zone. And one of the things he said as he's older now is he said, you know, sometimes I just wonder a lot of the guys that you take out and a lot of the guys, would I be the same way? These guys are warriors. Let's just take Afghani, like four young Afghani men.
Yep.
Who have been indoctrinated and have no education. Of course they're going to shoot at the occupier. And you got the warriors can recognize that, right? These guys are a little older and they see a bunch of 18, 19, 20-year-old kids with Kalashnikovs. They got to take them out, right? But in his heart and in his mind, he goes, damn, if circumstance, I got a job to do, but if circumstances were different, I would probably be exactly like those guys.
And that comes back to McNamara's point about, you know, the Vietnam War. There were two totally different stories being told on either side. The Americans were fighting against communism, and so therefore it was a righteous cause. And the Vietnamese had suffered under 1,000 years of colonialism, and so therefore it was a righteous cause, and they were defending themselves.
Yeah.
And that is that righteous mind that John Haidt talks about, where it's so easy for us to get wrapped up in a story where we are the good guys, and the other people are the bad guys.
Well, I mean, I remember there was a guy, this big bull-necked cop. I was on a cruise with my buddy Jimmy Burke, and this guy was just a hero among his people. He was mm-hmm. this Irish, rough-looking dude, and he was so out of central casting. He looked like a hero cop. Like, he just looked like this big, but he was an old, surly lion, you know, probably 65 at the time. And he had a decorated career, and he was recognized by all. And it was a bunch of state troopers and other police officers were on this cruise, and they all kind of, he was the alpha male. He was the silverback when he walked in the room. And they had all these stories. And they were talking about how he would have definitely, if a little kid fell overboard, he would jump into the water and save them without even hesitation. He was that guy. He saved so many lives. And then, and he would eat, sleep, and breathe any murder until he solved it. He had an impeccable record. I mean, he hated murderers, and he tried to make the world a better place. This was a good man. Mm-hmm. He was clearly a good man. He was trying to make the world a better place. And then his son-in-law tells a story, big Irish son-in-law tells a story about how there was a riot in Union, New Jersey, with a black in the black section, and they broke a bunch of windows in a white section. And so he and his buddies, as police officers, white police officers, ran through the black neighborhood and broke all the windows of the houses of these black people. And he's telling me the story after this guy had been heralded as this big hero cop, which he was in his community.
Wow.
But he ran through as payback with his baton and broke the windows of all these. And all I thought about was this some poor old black woman who,
of course,
who has to now tape her window with freaking plastic. And the duality there of this guy who I know, I bet you, even... Even if there was a little black kid or a brown kid or a little Chinese kid, I promise you he would exert the same effort to save that child.
Of course.
Because he believes in innocent. He believes in the American way. But he's also prejudiced. Or at least he's got an allegiance.
He's tribal, and he has a certain... Yeah. And there's a big difference between seeing that little brown kid drowning, and that's one human, and the sort of the vast concept of these people who are rioting.
Yeah.
That's the nature of the challenge of the human mind. That's what we're up against. That's what mixed mental arts is about. It's about raising awareness about how our minds work so that when we run into that Dunbar number... that we are aware that, you know, anybody who is outside of our group of 150 is just some sort of abstract representation in our mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't really know who they are. But at the same time, the challenge is that we have to have a conversation between 7 billion humans on how to run a planet. And so we both have to simultaneously... We can't do without those stereotypes, right? We can't do without some stereotypes about how other tribes work, how other groups of people think, what makes them tick. And then, you know, the question is, how good are those generalizations? Are they productive? Are they constructive? Or are they unhelpful? Mm-hmm. So as an example, you know, I have stereotypes about Japanese people. And one of those stereotypes is that, you know, Japanese people don't like it when you stick chopsticks upright in your rice.
It's sacrilegious because you do that, I think, at
funerals. Yeah. And I have a stereotype about Arab people that you don't show them the bottom of your foot because they find that offensive.
Yep. And both those stereotypes are true.
Yeah. And, you know, there are going to be exceptions within that stereotype. There are people who aren't like that.
Yeah.
But in the same way, you know, a lot of what we've been doing in mixed mental arts is driving certain stereotypes. Driving stereotypes about honor cultures, about dignity cultures,
cultures.
Macho cultures, atomism, holism, just mainly so that people can start to...
Is holism a word?
Holism is a word.
Wow.
Right. You know, and I actually had a
conversation. Making up your own words.
No. I had a conversation with Richard Nisbet about it, and I tried to use something else, mm-hmm. and he's like, holism is the word.
Thank you, Mr. Nisbet. Thank you very much.
So, you know, that's we're trying to give people frameworks and mental categories to better make sense of the world. So, yes, there are problems with generalizations, but there are problems that are created by refusing to generalize. And that's that you can't spot these broad patterns. And, for example, before we started podcasting, you talked about Thomas Sowell. And what Thomas Sowell is trying to do is trying to reveal these patterns. He's revealing that, you know, it's thinking of black people is not a helpful pattern. Thinking of people who are black rednecks and putting them next to white rednecks and seeing the commonality of that culture, and then thinking about people who came from the West Indies and seeing how that culture is different from black redneck culture, that is helpful. And that shows you that it's not an issue of race. It's an issue of culture.
Yeah.
And the point is that race is not mutable. You can't change your race. But you can change your culture.
And I've been reading a lot of Camille Paglia lately. I like her. And she's very articulate in sort of what the problem with academia is, especially New Age feminism, which is that you brand everybody. You essentially, masculinity is toxic and oppressive. And women are victims.
Right.
And in fact, the way you make the world a better place is that you mute, censor, imprison, expose, castrate the patriarchy,
mm-hmm.
so that the underlings can grow and breathe because they're being held down. What a terrible, bankrupt idea. It's ridiculous.
Yep.
It is because you're not taking into account the massive benefit that male aggression and linear thinking and Western thinking and competition and even predatory, you know, predatory impulse and territoriality and all the things that create some of the darkness also create a great deal of light, also give us all kinds of goodies.
Well, what has mixed...
including the longest running democracy known to man.
Well, what has mixed mental arts been if not one great hunt?
Yeah.
And a desire to tear apart...
Silence! Sorry, my children are getting loud. Sometimes I scream silence. Silence, children! I'm podcasting. Keep your voices down, please. Continue to play your video games. Your mind is video games.
Can we...
By the way,
so that the audience knows, the children are currently sprawled on some sort of animal fur rug.
Yes, it's a shearling.
In front of a fire. It's incredibly Game of Thrones.
I have aristocratic children.
Well, I'm...
being watched over by Danny, my governess.
And Lilu, you're...
and my German shepherd, who's standing guard like the dire wolf that she is. Panting aimlessly and blankly over my children.
Pants the German shepherd for cooling streams.
Speaking of children,
yeah.
To switch gears, because I know you were on a thought, but
yeah.
And I want to get back to it. You know, automation and... we are going to go through a period and it's going to be crazy where I can't predict what the economy is going to look like. And I don't know how to, and I'm being serious. I don't know what my kids should be studying. I suppose learn how to write code, but guess what? I think the only thing they should probably do, I think the only thing a computer can't, replace is maybe stand-up comedy and original comedy. So maybe I'll just teach them to be funny and get on stage. Well, they might be able to squeeze out a living.
I got a message today, earlier this week from someone Ong on the Mixed Mental Arts site, and he was asking about exactly this question: how does a person prepare themselves to survive massive technological disruption and automation? And I think it's a great conversation to have, and it's going to tie back to what we were talking about before.
Oh, good. How does one?
So I
you think, become a mixed mental artist.
Well, I think you become a mixed mental artist, and crucially, the answer for me, you know, Katie and I spent a lot of time thinking about this in writing The Straight A Conspiracy, but it actually all comes down to one quote from Alvin Toffler, the futurist. Mm. And he said, "The illiterate of the 21st century are not those who cannot read and write, but those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn." Mm. And it's the ability to teach yourself and the ability to adapt to new circumstances. Mm. Your children, and in fact, all of us who are alive today, are going to be in an environment that is constantly changing.
Yeah.
And so the key to surviving is not, do you acquire a skill set that you can then sell those skills again and again, year after year, but can you be constantly adapting? And can you be constantly changing yourself and rewiring yourself to cope with the new realities? And if you think about your own experience as a stand-up comedian, you know, you've had to learn Instagram, you've had to get into podcasting.
All of it.
So much of it.
You know what bodybuilders do?
What?
The way you continue to build muscle, not just with steroids, but the way you build muscle, is that you have to continually confuse your nervous system.
Yeah.
You cannot do the same exercises over and over again. You change it up all the time so that your body it keeps trying to play catch up, okay? Because what happens is if you do the same exercise over and over, your central nervous system will learn how to do it with great efficiency. Mm-hmm. You won't grow muscle. It'll use the muscle it needs, and it'll allocate those muscles, and you'll get very efficient at that lift.
Yep.
So a bodybuilder will totally confuse their body and keep changing the workout so you're never quite not sore. You're never quite...
Nope.
Comfortable.
And it's the same thing with the mind, because the body responds to signals, and the body doesn't adapt for the sake of adapting. It only adapts in response to a stress that it can't already handle. And so you have to constantly be challenging yourself so that you are constantly outside of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And the more you can put yourself outside of your comfort zone, then the more you are forced to adapt and change and be constantly evolving. And so For example, that's why I'm now doing things like mountain climbing and ice climbing and rock climbing.
Yeah.
Because I suck at them. And that's the point, is to constantly be sucking at things, so that you have to suck it up, work through it, adapt, evolve, and relearn all of those lessons constantly, those core lessons.
Yeah.
About managing expectations and, you know, taking it bit by bit and breaking it down and all of that. And that's what your kids need to learn. And the key thing is that learning how to learn can happen with any content. It doesn't matter what the content is. So you can learn how to learn by doing boxing. You can learn how to learn by doing gymnastics. You can learn how to learn with coding. You can learn how to learn with mathematics, with writing, with stand-up comedy.
And by the way, wouldn't you say that so much of learning is counterintuitive? I mean, so much of learning is not what you... I took a tennis lesson yesterday from a playing pro, a guy who's a real pro, competitive. And it was amazing how he kept saying, I don't want you to use anything, but I want you to lean into the ball and just your arm. I want you to be completely loose.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to actually slow your swing even more, as slow as you can make it, but your arm as loose as it can be, and I want you to bring it all the way around your body. I was crushing the ball with crazy topspin.
Mm-hmm.
Like nuts. And I was like, the lack of effort. I never would have thought that. There are certain things that you just don't. Anyway.
Well, but the key thing is there, that's very much, if you remember when we talked to Dan Coyle about the talent code, that's very much like what he talks about with the Spartak Tennis Academy, which is the tennis academy that produced Kornikova and all the other female Russian tennis players. And, you know, they play very slowly. And that's what deliberate practice is. Mm-hmm. It's going at the speed where you can control your performance and maintain excellence so that you're training the right habits. And if you're training the right habits, then the speed will come.
Mm.
But people in general want to, you know, and this applies, for example, to the SAT. The big problem with the SAT is always that kids are like, I only get 30 minutes per section, so I'm going to try and race through all these problems. But what you need to do is you need to slow down, and you might spend 5 minutes on a problem or 2 minutes on a problem to really understand it, really make sure you know what you're doing, make sure that it's really methodical. And then it's like wax on with Karate Kid. If we're doing the right kind of practice and we're really grooving in the right things, then you'll become better and better and faster, and the speed will come with practice.
Well, I mean, look, it's when you write a script, and I told you I'm writing a script. You know what most of writing is, in my opinion, and I've talked to really great, very successful writers, and they agree? So much of it is just walking around and daydreaming.
Yeah.
So much of it is, the writing of it is, when you actually start to write, and you know, so much of it is getting the outline in your head, then writing the outline, and then daydreaming some more. The last thing you finally do is write.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, Hitchcock's famous quote, right?
No.
So Hitchcock famously said, "Once the script is written, we can add the dialogue."
That's right. that makes total sense to me. That makes total sense to me.
So to tie this all back, in terms of what we were talking before, and you were talking about, you know, the state of academia, and that's a lot of what we've talked about over the last 200 episodes. I think, you know, we should talk about the, you know, the different places that have been at the forefront of human wisdom. Who has held the torch of wisdom and led the way for humanity?
If I had to rattle it off, I would start probably with Moses.
Yeah.
And I would go because of the Ten Tablets.
Uh-huh.
I would then probably jump to a rabbi named Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I would then probably go to the Buddha, and then I would go to Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I would have to, my wife wants to say goodbye.
Brian's on, Danish.
My Danish wife.
Brian's Danish wife.
wants to pay homage to me. You guys will hear me kiss her deeply on the microphone. I will drink deeply of her lips.
I want to see how kissing is done, so if you guys could demonstrate.
Come here, baby.
Oh, my God. That's beyond French. I don't. Is that the Danish way of kissing, Brian?
It's a good outfit. She's wearing wearing leather pants and boots. Yeah.
Yeah.
Way to go! Can't wait to screw this marriage up. All right. So back to me.
You need a practice marriage, Brian. Yeah. You can't. You need mistakes and then success.
Exactly.
But I think really you guys are going to be the kind of couple that like divorces and remarries repeatedly until eventually you accept. That
I got kids. I'm not going anywhere.
No.
No matter what, I'm not going anywhere. It's not about me. That's why I'm just not. What about your knees and your fulfillment? Shut up. Then there's Socrates and Aristotle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say there is, I mean, these are the torchbearers. And then there has to be Galileo and Copernicus and Shakespeare and Einstein and Freud and Newton. Those are the big names.
So the torch is being passed all around the world.
Yes.
And there have been different cultures at different times that have been at the forefront. So there was a period when,
And Confucius.
So there have been periods when, you know, the Chinese have led the way. There have been periods when the Greeks led the way, periods when the Arabs led the way, periods when the British led the way. You know, the torch has moved around the world. And I think for the last, 100 years, shall we say, the torch has been held by formal academia. It's been in universities in particular. And I think that the current state of universities means that if the torch is left in their hands, it will go out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it's the place to drive knowledge
because
forward.
Because they're atomistic or because they're too afraid to make a real stand on, I mean, to be intellectually honest or just a lot.
I think it's all of those things. Yeah. It's not a good intellectual climate for innovation or forward thinking.
And by the way, what is the university that barred Charles Murray?
Yeah.
I mean, shame on you. It was in, I think it might have been in Oregon, or was it in, Boston maybe? You people are pathetic.
Well.
Pathetic. I mean, you're so afraid of ideas.
Exactly.
You're so afraid because you don't have the confidence in your own ideas to fight what you don't agree with. And God forbid you actually listen and give it a fair shake. It's embarrassing, man. It's embarrassing. And it's sad and it's un-American and it's
anti-intellectual.
It's all of it.
Yeah. And so do you know the poem by John McCrae in Flanders Field?
No.
In Flanders Field, the poppies grow between the crosses, row on row, and it's all about World War I. Mm. But there's the end of it is. To you, from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high.
God.
And that, I think...
In other words, we fucked up.
Yeah, we're dead.
Do it better.
And now it's your turn.
Mm.
And I think now, to quote the Goonies, now, down here, it's our time. It's our time down here.
Yeah.
And I think that it falls to the podcasting community in particular to move these ideas
forward.
Good luck.
Well, no, you're right. There is some good stuff, though. You've got Radiolab. You've got Sam Harris, I mean, even though, but you've got a lot of people who are in earnest kind of like exploring these ideas and we can.
Yeah, they're trying to. And that's the point is that, absolutely, Sam Harris is, questioning a certain orthodoxy. There are people who are questioning orthodoxies, but these podcasts are the garage startups.
Yeah.
This is the place to really move and innovate these ideas forward. And so the academic research exists. We've summed it up in, the last 200 episodes, and we're going to keep doing a better job of summing it up and making it more accessible. But it now falls to, I think that, we've just got to sort of let go and break from the universities, in essence.
That's already, people like Jordan Peterson and those guys are already calling for that.
Exactly.
I mean, it's
John
amazing.
Haidt, it's the same thing with his Heterodox Academy. But what I'm saying is that I think that it falls now to the people, the ordinary people, to move knowledge forward. And that is where the real scientific reformation happens. And so I think that the next step for us is that last podcast we talked about, people who are critics, but that it's the man in the ring who counts. And this is really our opportunity to really get in the ring. Mm. And, you know, I think this is a big turning point for mixed mental arts, where now it's time, you know, we've made a book list and we've got 60 books that we think people should read. But it's not reasonable to think people should read all those 60 books. And a lot of the conversations that I've had with people in the mixed mental arts community is about the fact that I have certain friends that it's easy for me to bring in, but a lot of friends I can't, aren't even, are so asleep to the world of ideas that I can't expect them to read 60 books.
Right.
So now is the time to break those ideas down and make them into videos, make them super accessible. And so one of the things that Katie O'Brien and some other people in the mixed mental arts community have been working on is we want to make a series of videos, short videos called Culture Matters. And it's just a series of 2 to 3 minute videos that hopefully are funny and entertaining that give people tools to be able to more easily spark these conversations. So rather than saying, you know, you have to go read Thomas Sowell's Black Rednecks, White Liberals, we put make a short video that people can post on their Facebook feed or Twitter feed or Instagram feed or on Reddit, and they can spark a conversation. And we can really make, you know, these videos are knowledge bombs that we can then hand those knowledge bombs over to the people in the Caliphate, and they can go and blow people's minds.
I like that. I like that idea because that's what we need. People don't have time for the other stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's why part of that is, you know, I have set up a Patreon account. So people who want to support the podcast, if they want to give money, then that money will go towards making these videos.
Yeah, we make zero money for this podcast, just so you guys know.
And,
zero.
And I think
it's fine, too, but, you know.
But, well, and I think, crucially, I mean, you lose money.
The movie
money.
Would all go, yeah, I do. I actually lose
you
money.
You lose money.
I actually lose, yeah, I lose, yeah, I lose a lot of money.
Yeah, so.
But the money would all go to you.
Well, but it's not.
Because you're worth it.
But I also, but I make no money on this. This is not about making money. I've got a little bit of money coming in now from my own personal Patreon account.
Yeah.
But the point of this is that this is about actually practically making a difference in the world and empowering the wisdom of crowds. And so, and you know, I think what's so,
how do they contribute?
They just go to Patreon and they look for Mixed Mental Arts, and there's a Mixed Mental Arts account.
What is Patreon? I don't even know anything about it.
So Patreon is a site where it's based on patronage, where you can give one.
On our site, we should have a place where people can give.
We're going to have that on there. That's going to be incorporated into the Mixed Mental Arts website, which we should talk about, the new website. But literally, you can just give money every month, $1 a month, $5 a month, $20 a month. And you are then officially a patron.
$1 million
a month. Or $1 million a month. And then you're officially a patron of Mixed Mental Arts in the grand old tradition of the Medici.
Oh, that's great. the Medici who supported Michelangelo.
Exactly.
All right, I like that. Good.
And so, you know, if we can raise some of that money, then we can start to make these videos, and we can create more, better and better knowledge bombs.
I love
so that it's easier and easier to spark these conversations and start these conversations, and you can just post it on your Facebook feed and say, hey, what do you guys think about this?
I love it.
People will love it, and people will hate it, and they will talk it out, and we can start to get the conversation going in the right direction.
Good.
But it's also, I think, worth talking about and giving a shout out to Matt Maurer and Matt Madonna and Nicole Page Lee and a whole bunch of other people who have motivated entirely by Motivation 3.0. They also make no money and just want to make a difference, have built the new Mixed Mental Arts website.
I was going to say, thank you. So I was going to make sure we gave them a shout out because that was... That's very much appreciated. That's so flattering.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's so amazing. And yeah, because this is not about any of us.
Well,
it's not about you. It's not about me. It's not about,
no.
It's about having a forum in a time we really need it to really get those ideas out there.
And that's what's so cool is increasingly people are stepping up and coming forward. You know, there's this guy, Martin Totland, in Norway, who wrote this article all about Scandinavian and Viking culture. You know, there
really?
Are...
Really?
Yeah. There's
So let's talk for a second. Do you think... I guess we could create this mixed martial mental arts forum, couldn't we?
Well, that's the thing. It exists.
I would love to do that. Yeah.
It exists.
Okay.
And, you know, Sandy Baga now has... We have a mixed mental arts Reddit subreddit, and there are conversations happening there.
Wow.
There's the Facebook group. There are conversations happening there.
Hey, maybe I should join it.
Maybe you should, Brian.
For real.
Because
I'm starved for this. One of the reasons I have a dinner date, and Hunter came over because he was in the area and surprised me. And we had loosely talked about doing a podcast. And I thought to myself, I'm going to be late to this thing, but it's worth it because I don't get enough of you, obviously, and I don't get enough of this, and it's so important.
And
it's so important.
And there is now, we now have an actual tribe, Brian. Yeah. For the first time in our lives, there is a group of cultural mutts that have banded together and are really having these conversations.
Great.
And, you know, that's what's so great is that, you know, you send a flare like this up into the world and people find you who feel similarly and who fundamentally know that these conversations are important and are willing to devote their time and energy to it.
Look, when I come off stage now, there are so many people that say, hey, I love Mixed Mental Arts. I'm so used to them saying, I love The Fighter and the Kid, but it's encouraging to hear that this is also getting in there and
yep.
that people are listening. It's especially now I find myself so worried about the state of our world. And I it's not just Trump. I think he's a symptom. Mm-hmm. I think that we are living at a time where we are at the forefront or the beginning of massive, potentially massive social and political upheaval because of automation, because maybe even of global warming, because of globalism, because of just all of this stuff. Because I think you're going to have a number of people, most people, are not going to be able to learn, unlearn, and learn again.
Well, that's exactly what they haven't been taught in high school. And they have been prepared for the wrong world. They've been prepared for the industrial age. And
they've been prepared for the industrial age is right. And that's right. And also because certain ideas gain momentum. And, you know, one of the things that you find is that Trump was a symptom of the anger of so many good people who did all the right things. I mean, they did. And they are people who, you know, have contributed a great deal to the United States in one way or another, whether it was fighting for this country or building homes that we live in or doing all the, you know, all those things. And they are living in a world where their children have to move back in with them, saddled with a great deal of debt for college. And now they're all living under the same roof. Their kids have no future. You want to start a revolution? Create no future for someone's children.
Oh, and also, I mean, that's the thing. And, you know, what do you think that so much of the Arab Spring was about? And what do you think so much of ISIS is about? When you talk to people in the Middle East, they say this all comes down to dignity. And if you don't provide people with good paths to dignity, and this was the most recent blog post that I wrote about, is that, you know, people often say there's this phrase, right? A mind is a terrible thing to waste. And it's a very misleading phrase. Because a mind is never wasted. There is always someone who finds a use for it.
Damn right.
It might be, you know, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the head of ISIS.
Yeah.
It might be a warlord. It might be a drug dealer. It might be a pimp. It might be, you know, whoever it is. But there is always someone who finds a use for the lost sheep. And who finds a use for those souls who can't find their way. So minds are never wasted. I mean, Freeway Rick Ross, who we had on the show, is an amazing example.
Yeah.
You know, he had a tennis scholarship to go to college, but he couldn't read and write. And so he didn't pursue that path, that socially constructive path. But he found a way because he's resourceful and he's entrepreneurial. And instead, he ended up, you know, basically single-handedly popularizing crack cocaine. With all the consequences that that had. But his mind didn't go to waste. We shouldn't say that his mind goes
right,
to waste.
Right. It found
yeah. a way to get what he wanted and what he needed. So the challenge is that there are 7 billion people. The educational systems of the world are not preparing them for the world that we live in. And those minds aren't going to go to waste. And there are currently 70 million children who are getting no education.
Yeah,
70 million. That's a lot of people to be angry and lost and not able to support themselves and not able to get dignity. And Trump is the canary in the coal mine. And, you know, I think the crucial thing is that so much of, you know, those jobs didn't, you know, he talks about them going to China, but that was made possible in large part by technology. It was Silicon Valley and, you know, innovation all throughout the blue states that made the disappearance of those jobs in the red states possible. And we're living in a jobocalypse. More and more jobs are going to be
Well, just wait till we start automating. Just wait till Uber has automated cars and
or and automated trucks is huge. I mean, there are 3 million trucking jobs in the United States. It's the most common occupation in most of the states.
That's right.
And then there are all the people who support them in terms of
the medical field will have a whole bunch of robotics in there. I mean,
all of the fields, even coding. There's now more and more of coding is being automated. Yeah. So the reality is that most people's jobs are going to be disrupted out of existence. And if they're caught unawares or if they're caught unprepared or if we're not having a serious conversation about learning, unlearning, and relearning and helping people to find ways to dignity, then...
I'm optimistic because I think that that is being talked about. And I think that, you know, people are, human beings are very good at adapting when they have to.
I think
especially this country. But.
I have no, well, how well did the people in the red states adapt to the disappearance of their jobs overseas?
That was not, didn't work so well.
Yeah. So the point is that I understand.
Huge challenges.
Yeah, huge challenges. Yeah. And I think the point is that I have no doubt in humanity's ability to solve any problem if we all put our minds to it.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge is can we, you know, a lot of our time and attention is wasted on things that don't matter or we're fighting the wrong battles like the, you know, war on Christmas, what is Starbucks putting on their Christmas cups controversy.
Yeah.
It's not a good use of our time.
No.
I also don't think that it's productive to spend our time fantasizing about anarcho-capitalism because I don't think that's a realistic, practical solution. And I don't think that we should spend our time attacking religion. It's just not a helpful or a productive
That's interesting. I know what you mean by that.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're saying. There's a great deal of time wasted on, you know, sort of identifying what you think is the enemy.
Yeah. Or talking about, you know, you think about it even in like, I just think that the family analogy that Katie O'Brien loves to use where, you know, this is humanity's first family dinner. Right. For so many millennia, we've all been off in our little corners doing our thing. And then we all have been pulled together at one table and we're like, who the hell are these people? What do they really believe? They're crazy. And so much of what the conversation is about, it's the blame game. It's who did what to who 400 or 500 years ago. And obviously, we're white men. And, you know, a lot of that violence was perpetrated by white men.
We're white men. So we're awesome. What? What did I say?
Brian, what's that salute you're doing?
What happened, guys? What happened?
But the reality is that, you know, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. We can't change that past. We can only make amends in the present. And like we talked about last time, you know, I would love to make amends. I would love to build schools in African-American communities. I would love to, you know, talk about and bring attention to what happened to the Native Americans. And, you know, we had Charles C. Mann on to talk about 1491 and 1493 and talk about that genocide. But fundamentally, I would love to finally build a world where people are not judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And that is going to take work, and it's going to take a lot of uncomfortable conversations, and it's going to take violating a lot of orthodoxies, and it's going to take slaughtering a lot of people's sacred cows. Mm. And I'm ready to do some butchering. Let's go butcher some sacred cows, and let's move some ideas, and let's diffuse some innovations. Let's take these ideas that have been trapped in books for so long and turn them into short videos, songs, comedy.
I'm not doing songs. I'm not a singer.
Brian, you're an amazing
singer. You guys should read a lot, think a lot. Jared Diamond's my friend.
See, Brian.
William Bernstein doesn't really agree with everything he says. Darren Acemoglu in Why Nations Fail has a major rebuttal to everything that Diamond says. Yeah, yeah. It's about institutions. Or is it about the fact that grasses that are edible grow in your land? Yeah, yeah. It's both, you fucks.
Yeah, exactly. It's See, Brian, both, that was don't an amazing
be a,
song.
Don't be a relativist. Find out the difference.
Brian, that was amazing.
Never be a leftist. Don't be a rightist.
See, Brian.
Be a mixed mental artist.
I like how you said you couldn't sing and now we can't stop you singing.
Yeah. Sorry.
But I mean, that's the thing. All the great songs that you guys do on 10 Minute Podcast, you know, Mixed Mental Arts doesn't belong to either of us. I would love to. You're already dropping knowledge.
Well, white and guilty. White and guilty. Sorry.
Brian, I mean, maybe we should.
Eddie Bravo, my dear friend Eddie Bravo, who is a martial arts teacher and an amazing jiu-jitsu teacher, but is a huge conspiracy theorist and loves Alex Jones, was on Alex Jones and he called me far left, and I want to clear the water. I am not far left, Eddie. Nobody who listens to Alex Jones listens to this, I don't think, but anyway.
Well, I think that actually brings up another point, too, which is that I was talking to Katie O'Brien about the whole fundamentalism thing and rebranding it and maybe doing a slightly different tone, and she was suggesting that we need to go further with it because fundamentalism sort of brings out people's serious side, and we want to call out this behavior as ridiculous. And so she was suggesting that we start nominating a jihadi of the week. And that every week...
I don't like that because then we have to figure out a way to... I don't have time to... that's the problem with that extremism, and it's eye-catching, is that, you know, you got to justify it. And then people tend to... Look, it's a lot like when Alex Jones says that Hillary Clinton likes to chop up little children. And what he's really saying, of course, is that she didn't stop ISIS and she was instrumental in turning a blind eye to all this stuff.
Right.
So he extrapolates. And, you know, what happens to all of us is we go, ho-hum, more of the same. So there's a better way to do it. Let me think of it.
Okay, well, that's...
But I don't want to call anybody as
your... That's your job as the comedian. But as, you know, an example of someone who should win this award, whatever that award may be, I would love to talk about the guy who made a one-hour Pizzagate video about Brian Callen.
A two-hour Pizzagate.
Two-hour. Yeah.
Apparently I'm gay.
So I think you should break this down for...
I don't want to give that guy... I don't actually... I didn't watch it, and I don't want to give that guy any lip service because... he's just, these people are
ridiculous.
This is lunatic fringe stuff. So we should probably not give that guy any credit.
But you don't think that we should reveal them for the silly geese that they are?
No, because they're so crazy.
Yeah.
They just are. They believe in flat earth. I mean, they do. You know, there are people that believe in the earth as being flat.
Yeah.
And if you disagree, then you're a shill and you're a
for
liar
the round earth industry.
And for NASA.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, and that you know, if you really believe that the moon landing was real, then you're a liar as well. And, you know, and
but see,
you know,
I
Neil
think...
Armstrong, one of these guys was attacked for being a liar. I mean, this is, I can't.
I'll
stick to Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's funny that flat earthers aren't actual astrophysicists. That's what's amazing about them. They're just these dudes who live with their moms.
I
can't even get into it.
But see, I think the challenge in general is that there is this idea of we're just not going to talk about the crazy. And
they're so 0.01%. They're so...
You think so? Yeah.
They're, I mean, I can't. Well, you want to talk about the earth being flat and that dinosaurs are not real? I can't. I'm too busy. I'm actually too busy.
Yeah.
I'm too busy.
Yeah.
But please believe that. That's awesome. Continue to believe that. And, you know, in if the revolution happens, I'll be waiting. I got a lot of guns. I do.
Yeah.
I'll be waiting. I can fight. There's a reason I practice fighting.
Yeah.
There's a reason I shoot. There's a reason that I have a home that's prepared. I am a good fighter.
It's your backup plan.
Those
for,
people, I'll come for you.
Yeah.
I'll see you soon. If the shit really hits the fan, I know who I'm headhunting. I really do.
Yeah.
I got a list. But that's down the road, man.
Well, let's hope that if Mixed Mental Arts does its job, then that won't be necessary.
Yeah, I mean that's the danger. I worry about that, you know. I worry that things will break down into violence.
Well,
I worry that we are that polarized.
Mikhail Gorbachev said that the world is preparing for a war.
I am very, very worried.
I think the world is. Yeah. And I think that unless we can steer things in a more productive direction.
And no one wins. No one wins.
Of course not.
The sociopaths do. That's it.
Yeah.
You know.
And
none of us win.
Well, I mean, the sociopaths do, and the rest of us lose. Yeah. But that's the nature of, Katie and I have been working on, you've met her, but we've been working with Cheryl on an augmented reality project. Mm-hmm. And we've been trying to pick a book to focus on first. And I think what we're going to end up doing is Animal Farm. And so all of these things are very much fresh in my mind. And, you know, the Napoleon is always right, which is what Boxer the Horse constantly says.
The crazies, the lunatic fringe are not what I worry about.
Yeah.
It's the other ones. It's the people that break the world down into winners and losers and not good and evil, like, mm-hmm. like Putin, like Trump. It's the authoritarians. It's the fascists. It's those old dirty ideas like polio, if mm-hmm. they're not, you know, if we don't practice vigilance, they find a way back into our bodies.
Well, and if we allow ourselves to be cowed, and crucially, I think also if we don't build a better idea.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I was
my buddy Brendan, who I love, said because he's younger, he said that when the CIA was exposed by the New York Times for having all kinds of abilities and probably practices of, you know, listening, breaking into your phone, mm-hmm. using your smart TV as a listening device, even when it's off. And he said, I don't really care because I'm not doing anything bad. Mm-hmm. And it's just because he's just not been exposed to why that's bad. And he's just not had that aspect of his, you know, he hasn't had that education yet, and he will, but that's the danger. Those are subtleties. That's mm-hmm. where you have to, again, what is it? Getting an idea, the right idea, explaining why that is very dangerous and why just because you're not doing anything wrong at the moment, you don't give a government body that kind of power over you.
But that also, that comes down to a knowledge of history. The reason why we're...
But we keep repeating ourselves. That's right. So that's what I mean. The danger is that we will repeat the worst parts of our history.
And that comes down to, you know, you can't learn from history if you don't know history. And, you know, realistically, Brendan is exactly the kind of guy that we want to reach with this. Yeah. And, you know, it's not reasonable to expect Brendan to read 60 books.
Yeah.
It is reasonable that, you know.
Well, he does. I mean, he's a bad example because he's a very bad example because he's that guy. You don't ever bet against someone like that. All he does is read. He was like, oh, this is what I love about Brennan's a very, very good example, actually, of how people should behave, because Brennan had majored in sports his whole life, and he was hanging mm-hmm. out with me, and he goes, and he's very honest with himself, and he goes, hey, man, I'm a double major. I'm a smart guy, and I don't know what the hell these guys are talking about, but guess what? I want to.
That's awesome.
So he called me up, and he goes, hey, bro, what do I read?
Yeah.
And I gave him books, and all he does is read and watch documentaries.
Well, so there
now,
you go.
He's got a point of view.
There you go.
Now, when I explain to him, like, mm-hmm. why, and he probably knows, but he had said that just off the cuff. We were just kind of talking.
Yeah.
But somebody gave us a hard time about it, and he knows. I mean, he's very, very smart and reasonable, but I promise you, when I explain it to him, which I probably won't even have to, because he's exposed himself.
Yep.
He'll go, yeah. The great thing about athletes like that is that they're so comfortable being, like, just making adjustments.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, you want to talk about a guy who can learn and unlearn and learn again?
Yep.
That's what sports do. Exactly. To a guy like that.
And I think that's the point, is that there you go. Brendan, it hasn't taken much. Brendan has just had to be exposed and challenged and forced to adapt. And then now he's embracing this new side of himself in the same way that I, being squishy and fat and an intellectual, have been exposed to MMA and am now, like, you know, painfully learning to box.
Yeah, good for you.
But that's the nature of things, is people just need exposure to these things, and then they'll get inspired, and then they'll take on these challenges.
Right.
And, you know, again, the important point, why I was talking about this with learning earlier, is that if you've learned one thing, you can learn anything. Mm-hmm. because if you know how to, you know, become world class in sports or fighting or boxing, it's the same process for learning books or any of ideas. And it's, you know, it's amazing. Like I had this great experience that I talked about before. There's this this kickboxing teacher that I've been going to who is fantastic. And there's actually, this has happened to me multiple in different, a kickboxing class and in a boxing class. And both teachers have come up to me and they said, you know, like you're not great at this, but what I really appreciate is how teachable you are.
Oh, that's
you're
awesome.
Really open and, you know, I could see that you're really giving your all and you're constantly trying to get better. And, you know, we just had a conversation. It's like, I teach. I know what it's like.
Yeah.
I know how teaching works. I know what's a good use of my time. I know what's, you know, it's satisfying for you.
Yeah.
And so.
And you're also not afraid. You don't have a lot of resistance.
No.
You know, you're kind of open. You're open to.
Well, that's what effective learning is about is. And, you know, the kickboxing teacher, I've mentioned this before and I've become very fond of it. And, you know, he, you know, says all of this to me and, you know, he's sort of floating this thing out. And I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, it's about beginner's mind. Right. It's that old Buddhist concept of always keeping the beginner's mind. And then he says, yeah, you always got to put the white belt back on.
Yeah.
And that's what it all comes down to. It's always being. And the nature of the 21st century is that the 21st century is the century of always putting the white belt back on. You will always be having to put the white belt back on because your industry will disappear. Things will change. You'll find yourself in a new environment. You have to move halfway across the world and be surrounded by a culture you don't understand. And you got to put the white belt back on. And that's what mixed mental arts is about, is every damn day you wake up in the morning and you put that white belt back on and you see what the world exposes you to.
I'm going to end us right there because that's a great way to button this whole up, this whole thing up. Hunter Motz buttoning it up for us again in a tidy, neat, and beautiful bow. Ladies and gentlemen, another episode of Mixed Mental Arts.
See, that's learning, Brian.
Sorry about my children in the background. I banish them to the upstairs with their governess. God bless you. And I'll be in San Diego at the end of the month doing stand-up at the American Comedy Company. So you come visit me March 30, 31, April 1. I'm excited. American Comedy Company, AmericanComedyCo.com. Get your tickets now, you filthy animals.
You've been listening to Mixed Mental Arts with Brian Callen and Hunter Motz. For more information and past episodes, please visit briancallen.com and mixedmentalarts.club. Also, be sure to follow the show on Twitter @MixedMentalArts. Until next time, bye-bye.